the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up Series podcast. The best of our Cardinals talk on the web. I'm your host, Jess Root, from CardsWire.com, the USA Today NFL wire site that covers your Arizona Cardinals. And recording with me is co-host Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, SB Nation's Arizona Cardinals site, as we continue on our off-season shows as we kind of work through things. We're coming up. There's still NFL playoffs. We will talk playoffs as well. But we're in January. Like I actually completely missed the first draft thing being the Hula Bowl. I know it's not that big a deal. No, most it doesn't get, but like the Hula Bowl happened and what? But they've met with players and those tend to be, of course, lesser, you know, heralded prospects in general, but the Hula Bowl's done. We've got the Senior Bowl coming up in a couple of weeks, so we'll have content for weeks and months. Seth, I got the playoffs this weekend, and we're going to talk about those. Let us though start with our team superlative. So this is our award show. We will be getting soon announcements for league awards. We're starting to get those across. I just put in my votes for the Pro Football Writers of America. They're all pro. They're all NFL and conference teams and seems stuff like that and all rookie teams. And it's time to do that for the Cardinals, isn't it, Seth? Since we've given the positions great, but let's talk about the best and the worst, right?
Right. And, you know, this is an interesting year because I think, you know, you've got some choices and you've got some options, but I think some of them are pretty like easy calls too.
Yeah. And well, so the awards, we're going to kind of go through awards. No one's actually getting awards. You know, we're going to go with the team MVP. We're going to go with offensive defensive player of the year, the best offensive defensive player, the most improved, going with the comeback player, biggest surprise, best rookie, biggest disappointment. So I mean, that's not really an award. That's a dubious thing. And then we'll go over the playoffs because we got the divisional round this week. Some games that aren't expected to be close. So let's start off with the most valuable player, Seth. If you had to pick a most valuable player on this Cardinals team in 2024, who would it be?
You know, I went back and forth on this one, and it was tough. But in the end, I went with I know this is going to sound crazy. I went Paris Johnson.
Oh,
and so let me explain. When Paris was healthy, and you and I started to talk offline quite a bit, and we'll never know, obviously, but when Paris was healthy before the bye week, he was playing at a near Pro Bowl level. Now, I don't know how many of you have paid attention or, quite frankly, if Jess and I talk so much before the show, too, that sometimes I forget what we actually talk about or, like, what I say offline. So if I didn't say this, I apologize. But, you know, we were joking the other day that, you know, it's going to be tough for Paris to ever make a Pro Bowl or an All-Pro. He'll probably make a Pro Bowl, but be an All-Pro just because of the depth at the left tackle position in the NFL currently, right?
Well, like you know what impacts All-Pro more than anything? The quality of your team. I looked at the first team All-Pro team. I believe 24 of the 30 players came from playoff teams, and I think three others were legacy all pros. They'd been all pros before. And then you had Brock Bowers and then like your returners, but like Brock Bowers who had just an absolute, just special season. And so, and like we were talking about, cause in one of our group texts, you know, how's going to get it? Cardinals will like, they weren't good this year and their players weren't good enough, but they will never get all-pro conversation without an absolute special season until they're a playoff team.
Right. And so, you know, you look at the way Paris had played. And so I'm giving him a little bit of a benefit of a doubt too. Like, I don't know if anything was wrong beforehand, but man, he came back after the bye week and he started to struggle a little bit. And it was interesting because as he started to struggle, obviously Kyler, the offense started to struggle a little bit. We saw the improvement of the defense and it was a good, you know, it was a great sign. We were all very excited about, right? And so that's why I was like, you know, thinking about this before the show, and I'm like, who would I say was like the guy this year that was the MVP? And it's a tough question. It really is. And so when I was like, it's the guy that when he was healthy and playing well, this team looked like they were playoff bound, right? Like,
yeah.
We were like, hey, this is they're on the and so his injury, his you know,
the decline in play, injury, yeah, whatever down, it was,
down tick in play. So I think Paris's health was kind of the definition of what the MVP was, right? Like, this team was so much better when he was playing and playing at a high level. I know people are going to be like, well, Kelvin Beachum was fine. You know, there was no issues with the O-line, but the shift in all of it after he got injured, you know, it was just
started the Seattle game, and it was right. The Seattle game started, and that was when just Leonard Williams just wrecked everything. Kyler played a little different. Like, he stopped trusting his
offensive line. Yeah.
And then Paris started playing a little worse. And so he, like, in Paris, in his edges, those mattered. And right. Once he stopped being able to trust his edges, he looked like a different quarterback.
Yeah, and so that's why, you know, I thought, and you know, it's easy to say James Conner, right? It's easy to say. So I was trying to think of something critical and, like, different and that would, like, give a shout-out to a guy that I thought had a really, really good season that was on track to be exactly what we want him to be. And then, you know, injuries kind of derailed the end of the season. And it makes me wonder how close he is to being one of those guys, you know. And like I said, it's unfortunate because, you know, you look at the all-pro voting at left tackle, right? Just the voting, and you're like, all right, well, you're like, well, he's not getting in over, you know, whoever was number one this year. I can't remember off the top of my head. And then you kind of go through it, right? And I'm looking at it again. So Wirfs was number one. Jordan.
Yeah, Wirfs was.
Mailata, it was number two. Those guys are both young, right? Like, young players. They're a little older than Paris, but they're still young players, you know. Deion Dawkins, another guy that's fairly young. You know, those are guys. And to your point too, right? Tampa Bay playoff, Philadelphia.
And Wirfs was a little bit of a legacy guy because of how great he was on the right side.
Right. And he's the first one ever to be first team all pro left and right tackle now. Which is wild to think, right? Since they went to that designation. You know, shout out Steve Keim for taking Isaiah Simmons. So you know, it was just one of those ones where you look at it and you just I think Paris's value to the team is so big right now that we don't even kind of understand it because he, you know, it's just, I don't want to say it's overlooked because I don't think it is, but I think at times we take for granted, you know, how good of a player he really is.
And mine, that was a really good surprising pick. A lot of insight to that. I went with the layup. Now, like the local chapter of PFWA, James Conner and Buda Baker both received co-MVP, and I know how that went behind the scenes. But I'm going to go with the layup, and I'm going to say James Conner because he was the heart and soul of the side of the ball that really played more consistently well over the course of the season. And as James Conner went, the offense went. He topped what he did last year. He came just shy of 1,100 yards rushing, topping last year's numbers and doing so while missing the last couple of games. Played the career high.
And it's his playing style, and so it's, you know, never going to change, or you're never going to get him for a full season. But, like, wouldn't it be great if you could get him for one full season? Like,
so amazing.
But, and I get it. Like, I truly do understand. It's just never going to happen because you're talking about a guy that plays the way he does. And so his playing style doesn't afford him to, I know this sounds weird, but it basically doesn't allow him to be healthy for a full season, right? Like,
it's tough. It's tough because he's so physical. And it's a different type of physical that we've seen from other backs, like big backs. We got Marion Barber, who was one of those, and the guy from the Giants years ago, but they would just,
and their
production literally just fell off a cliff. And Connor's athleticism, he moves well. And from the time he came to Arizona that first year when he was a touchdown merchant and became famous for all the fantasy points, the next years after that, he became a better back. And he's so impactful. And I almost wish that he wasn't. I mean, offensively, like for the value of the team, to have that much, to rely that much on your lead running back.
Yeah.
I don't love that for offensively for the success of the team, but Connor definitely warrants that. And part of that was, it was to honor Connor in a way that he deserves for these lowly podcast awards we're giving away. It lined up better to give him MVP for the other awards, quote unquote, that we're giving that I had picked out for the next one. But Paris, that was a sneaky good pick, honestly. Offensive player of the year. I think this one is, I don't think it takes much to talk about this. For me, it's obvious. It's Trey McBride, the record setting season, over 100 catches, almost 1,200 yards. And probably McBride's play is the reason why Marv didn't have a bigger season. Because
1,000%.
Because Kyler already is on 100% the same page as Trey McBride. Now, he could have done more with Marv, but when you've got a guy like McBride who can make all the plays that he does, like, how could you not give him the ball with the impact that he has? And he's already, I know I never saw Jackie Smith play, so there's that. In my lifetime, the Cardinals have never had a tight end of this caliber, literally ever. And we've seen a lot of tight ends that people are like, this guy's gonna be great. Dan Arnold and Ricky Seals Jones, and like, this guy's the real deal. This guy is the real deal. And it's on top of that is that he has this perfect, just innocent football. He's intense, but there is something, and I hope it doesn't go on away. I don't hope it doesn't go away as he gets a little older, as he gets the big contract, but just he's an absolute joy to watch, the way he smiles, the way he interacts with fans. It reminds me of George Kittle in that sense, because George Kittle is just an oddball. Who else could you give it to than Trey McBride?
I mean, the only other guy you could potentially even consider giving it to would have been to give it to James, right?
Right, like, right.
And you could have. McBride had
the special season. Like, well, if I think Trey's the offensive, like, that's why I want to give James the MVP, because he deserves that.
Right. And that's what I was going to say. You would have to flip it, right? You'd have to do one or the other. Like, you can deal with both of them that way. So, yeah, it's a really, I think you're right. And like I said, that would be mine too. It's a pretty, like you said, fairly straightforward, easy pick. Like, not a whole lot of controversy or questions about that one.
And I think the same could be said on the defensive side of the ball. This one is also a layup. It's a, you know, minus 10,000 odds in terms of betting. If anyone were betting on these, it's got to be Buda Baker, because he was the best and most impactful, had the best statistical season. You know, he's second team All Pro, another Pro Bowler, and
I was gonna say, he's their only good player when you look at it from the ranks of fans, media, and players, coaches, right? Like, he's literally it.
So productive this year. Just the sheer number, and the fact that he played the whole season. I mean, last year, we talked about it last year. He was not otherworldly. He is a special player in the impact that he has. But last season in 2023, we felt like Buda was maybe coming down. And then to have the season that he had this year was so good. He was so good this year. You just wish that he could make more plays on balls. Like, he dropped a couple of interceptions, but let's be fair. This is the player he was destined to be when he came into the league. What was the knock? What was really the only knock about Baker coming out of college?
Right.
It was his hands. It was the interceptions.
And you know, you've got a guy that's been excellent as a leader for the defense, that, you know, has embraced what Jonathan Gannon and Nick Rollis are doing on defense. And you know, it's interesting, right, to see the turnaround and just his belief. And I know, you know, it's easy to say that when you're like, oh yeah, but he got paid again. So, and that's true. And I you and I can recognize that, but like, to see the leadership and how he has been, you know, it's been really impressive, right?
Yeah, 100%. Well, and even like, we go back a year and a half ago, almost 2 years ago, when he made that trade request, it never lingered. Like,
it wasn't awkward.
No,
right?
Like, because they redid his deal. It cost, like, the amount of money he got from the redone deal was simply, it was $400,000. And I think it ended up being paying out to him a little more than $1 million because of the bonus that they added for like the Pro Bowls after that. But, you know, they did a little tweak of the contract and he bought into Jonathan Gannon. And now he wants to stick around. So that is something really, really important.
Right. And we're getting close to like the point where it's either he's going to retire a Cardinal, which would be wonderful, obviously, or, you know, he ends up on the like Aeneas Williams track where he plays like
Then he plays again, wins a championship with the Rams or something.
Right. So, but yeah, I mean, it's great to see. And so,
let's move to the next one, which would be the most improved player. Who would be your pick for the most improved player? This one's tougher for me.
This one was a slam dunk for me. So, you know, at first I wanted to go to Garrett Williams, but then I was like, well, he was good last year. And quite frankly, you know, here's my issue with like most improved in that sense. He was good last year, and you saw a guy that could potentially be, right, that every down nickel, like, he is that talented, right?
Yeah.
And so then I was like, well, who do you go with? And then it clicked. And you and I talk, I don't want to say negatively, because we don't talk negatively, but we're always talking about like how, you know, if this guy is your best at this position, you know, that's not ideal. However, his improvement over the last year has made it that I think Zaven Collins is the most improved player.
That's a good one.
Because like you're seeing a guy that is now a rock solid lockdown edge run stopping defender. He's getting better as a pass rusher. He's only 25 years old. He's continued to improve. I mean, think about this. You know, when we talk about college prospects, right? What do we want to see? Growth yearly, like, right? That continued growth, not the oh crap, like he had a freak 10 sack season after averaging one sack a season, right?
Yeah.
And so last year 3.5, this year 5. Like he is improving, and he's unfortunately, unfairly, maybe is the better term, had to be the primary pass rusher, which is just not, we've talked about that. That's not, that shouldn't be his game. So to see him improve as the primary pass rusher, to take that next step to being one of the best edge defenders in the NFL against the run, that's why I would give him this shout.
That's a good one. I was almost there, but actually I went to a guy that had even no expectations. And I'm going to go with Jesse Luketta, another edge guy, because he went from being literally an afterthought on the roster, a guy who couldn't even, like last year, didn't make the roster initially. He wasn't there on the roster the entire time. And so, it wasn't early in the season and he was pushed into a starting role, but it's because his play improved and he actually became like, he was really good against the run because he's so disciplined. He wasn't trying to make plays. He's like, I'm a set the edge. You guys clean it up. But then he also started to get some impact as a pass rusher, as opposed to Luketta, who I felt coming into this year was outside linebacker at the bottom of the depth chart. Like he was the bottom, and he ended up, now granted it was, you know, it was attrition because no BJ and then Gardick went down. But of that cluster of players, Victor DeMakagi and Julian Aquara and Xavier Thomas, it was, and Lego Baron Browning, it was Luketta who stepped up. And I think that while he did not, like, he proved he could be a rotational guy. He didn't make the same thing. Like, Zaven is a better player, but Luketta went from, like, barely want on the field defensively to a guy you can trust on the field defensively. He's now, he's moved up from, you know, back of the roster special teamer, just the guy you want on the roster because of how he is in the locker room. He's just a special type of guy, to a guy that's gotten some production. And you know, he's a restricted, or I think he might be exclusive rights still, or I know he's a restricted free agent and he's going to be back. Like he's going to be back, but it's not going to get expensive. He's not going to be expensive though. And so he's a nice piece to have, who does things the right way. And the perfect guy in the locker room. Like he fits in on any team.
Well, it's always good to have guys, and excellent pick, by the way. It's always good to have guys that are, and it sounds bad when I say it, so I don't want it to come off this way, but like that know their place, right? Like their ego fits in the room because they understand like, hey, this isn't me, right? Like I'm not that guy. Like I'm good. I'm good enough to play in the NFL. I'm one of those guys, but like, I'm not Buda Baker. Right. But, and so like when a guy knows his place and plays his role, it creates a harmonious, you know, type of thing. And that's what I love about Luketta is, you know, like you said, he's a great team guy. He's a guy that continues to improve and, you know, keep his head down and work, and that's what you want on your team.
Comeback player of the year. For me, that one was a little bit tougher, but and his play late in the year did it. And for me, that's LJ Collier, because what, he had the one game in 2023. And while I thought the first half of the season was really unspectacular, he became a presence defensively late in the year. And for the fact of the matter that he basically had his first ever, like his first ever healthy season in the NFL. This is a guy who was a first round pick, who was viewed as a disruptor. That he played every, like his second season in the NFL in Seattle, he played all 16 games, had 3 sacks, but playing as a 4-3 edge, as a defensive end. And he's always been kind of a tweener in that sense, because he's big. And then with the Cardinals, because of their scheme, they just push him inside. He plays that interior position, and he is disruptive. And he had 29 total tackles, 3.5 sacks. I think for what we saw from the players who were on the roster from last year to this year, Kaiser White missed significant time, but I don't think he played well enough. Like there wasn't that great comeback, as opposed to Collier, who missed the entire season basically and played pretty well.
Yeah, and you know, we talked about most improved, and there was a reason I ended up going with Zaven over Garrett, because I gave this to Garrett, right? Like, I know he played slightly last year, but to see him come in this year and you know, you mentioned it, it's very difficult for Arizona Cardinals to get the recognition they deserve, especially when you're talking about it's
the best cornerback nobody knows about.
Right. And he's turning into a guy that people know, and like people are like, wait, who's Garrett Willett? And that's a cool thing when you're, you know, a Cardinals fan and you can watch that maturation happen. You know, this is one of those picks where when it happened, we were like, I don't know, right? Because like you're picking an injured guy that, you know, it doesn't have great size, this, that, and the other. And then he just comes out and he's a straight up baller, and he's really good, and it's a lot of fun to watch him play. You know, and so that's why I would give it to Garrett Williams.
Biggest surprise. Who was your biggest surprise this season?
You know, again, this one was a little tougher, because I think there were some good and bad surprises. For me, I think the biggest surprise for in the positive direction, and I know people are going to laugh at this, Chad Ryland.
Oh my gosh, yes.
I was shocked when the Cardinals decided that he was the guy that was going to replace Matt Prater. But you and I joke about it all the time, right? Like it's a joke. Like you don't draft kickers, you wait till somebody else releases the kicker they draft, and then you pick them up, and then they become, you know, and again, I'm not going to get ahead of myself, but they become very good. I don't want to say an all pro, because he hasn't done that yet, but like, you know, and that's kind of where this is leading, right? Like, this is a guy who was...
He was so not good his rookie year, 16 of 25 field goals. Now, right at the end of the year, he seemed to lock in a little bit. But my goodness, how reliable overall that he... Like he, no kicker's going to make every kick.
No.
But he was super reliable, and reliable enough that they... basically benched, like they put Prater in position to come back. And I think that was the case. It was simply, we will bring Prater back for the playoffs.
If it's warranted. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was just never needed. So yeah. So I give it to Chad Ryland again. I know a little bit off the wall, but
no, that one is a fantastic pick, because like when Prater went down, we were like, oh, man. And then when they signed Ryland, we're like, ooh.
Yeah, we were kind of like, what are you doing? You know, and we've never had this conversation, but do you think, because I don't know who's still there or who was still there. I don't even know who's there now, if I'm being completely honest. But, like, do you think it was Monty's relationship with guys in New England that made him make that decision?
It could be. Like, I wouldn't be surprised at all, like, if he's got... Like, you know, when you're out there, when Prater gets hurt and then you bring in some kickers and, you know, the kickers are out there and you call up your buddy. So what did you think of this kid?
Right. And why didn't it work? And it's one of those situations where I know this is weird to explain, but it's like, hey, he couldn't be here anymore. right? Like he had to get out of here. Like the die had already been cast because of how bad he was. And so, you know, give him a shot because we really liked him. We like this and that and, you know, the other stuff about him. And that's why I wondered that, you know, we've never talked about that, but I was just thinking that I'm like, I wonder if Monty's, you know, if the influence of New England and guys he knows that were like, hey, he's not going to work here because of how bad the start was, but I think he'd be great there. You know,
that's well, and here's the fact of the matter is that you like, especially when the Cardinals have had to find kickers off the streets before, you never know. So you literally never know. That is, and he was like, honestly, a surprise. I'm going to look at as well as the surprise for this year, of course, as a good thing. And that would be, I'm going to bounce it, tie it between the Ryland was a big surprise, but the impact of Mack Wilson.
Yeah,
when they signed him, you're like, a 3-year deal. He's a guy who had been a starter as rookie, but basically was just a special teams player with sprinkled in rotational stuff, and to have the impact that he did, I guess it didn't feel as surprising because he was one of their big free agent additions, but that was, they were going out on a limb for that one, to sign a guy to starter money who hadn't shown any time recently that he was going to be a good starter. You know, they did the same thing that they did with Josh Woods last year, but
right,
they gave
exactly.
Josh Woods a 1-year deal. It was a 1-year deal, and they're like, okay, you can play special teams for us, and he proved that he could start. Mack was kind of the same type of guy with more, like he had a better pedigree coming in because of his time in college and things like that, but then they're like, they invested in him. And so that, for me, for him to end up having the impact and potentially, he quite potentially is going to be their defensive quarterback a season from now, is how things are looking, since, you know, Kaiser seemed to tease a departure that Mac's going to be the guy.
Yeah, and it begs the question, is the next guy Owens, or are we going to be talking about Owen Papo as the, you know?
Yeah, that's one of the fun offensive, like fun questions of the offseason. Best rookie or the top rookie, our Cardinals rookie of the year. Are you gonna play around and try to sneak in something other than Marv? I mean, Marv didn't have the year that so many of us wanted. We thought, yeah, 1,100 yards, easy, right? We're going to, like, he's going to have 90 catches and 1,100 yards. He's going to have 10 touchdowns. And it just didn't happen. And compared to, like, he's not going to make an all-rookie team. He's not going to make the offensive rookie of the year. Brian Thomas and Ladd McConkey and Malik Nabers all had far better seasons than he had. But, I mean, comparatively, historically, had one of the best rookie seasons for a receiver that the Cardinals have ever had. He's number 2 in receiving yards for a rookie. He tied the rookie record. He had more catches than Larry Fitzgerald did his rookie season. 62 catches, 885 yards, 8 touchdowns. That's a pretty dang solid first year. It just pales. It feels less good when you see other team, well, and then you look at the reasons why those other teams, like Brian Thomas and Ladd McConkey and Malik Nabers, had monster seasons. Guess what? They had nobody else to help them, so they just throw them the ball. The Cardinals had 1,100. They had almost had a 1,200 yard. You know, they had a 1,200 yard tight end receiver in Trey McBride. And so, you know, when you get nearly 900 yards from your second most productive receiver, that's good. And so, like, can you even entertain giving the top rookie award to anyone other than Marv?
No. Next question.
And this is the last one, which is not the best one for you. What was, and okay, and maybe it doesn't, like, in terms of player disappointment, What was your biggest player disappointment for 2024?
You know, I think it can coincide, you know, a little bit, but I would go with the passing game in general. I just expected more, and maybe that was foolish because, you know, as you stated, your top pass catcher is a third-year tight end who's excellent. You know, I don't want to take anything away from him, but it's still the third best at his position in the league, right? Which is good. I mean, I don't want anybody to think I'm saying that's bad. It's just, you know, he's not an all-pro. And then a rookie. And so, you know, those things should have probably told us that it wasn't going to be this, you know, high-powered offense the whole time. But, you know, so that was a little disappointing. So I think it would be a combination of, you know, whether it's Marvin or Kyler or just the pass game in general. That's how I kind of look at it.
Yeah, for me, I didn't really feel that the Cardinals had many players who were disappointing, like wildly disappointing in terms of quality of play. But rather, and I think this is like, I think if we went back and listened to these shows for the last couple of years, it almost always is the result of injury. And so that ends up being disappointing in that way. And for me, you can, I look at, in particular, the biggest disappointment for me was not getting a full season out of Justin Jones. Secondarily would be Darius Robinson, because, you know, first round pick, the impact that it looks like he can have, and it did nothing. There were things like film wise that you like, but the number one is they paid Justin Jones a lot of money to come here after he had his best when it looked like he was ascending as a pass rusher in the middle of the defensive line, and to have him, like, statistically, he did nothing. He statistically was nothing. He didn't really impact the pass game, although you did see a drastic decline in quality of run defense after his season-ending injury. But I, for me, Justin Jones was the biggest disappointment of the season because he came in as their highest paid, they're like, outside of Jonah Williams, but he was their offseason prize on the defensive side of the ball. And ultimately, neither was durable nor productive.
Yeah, and that's always disappointing to see. You know, and I think you could lump all of them. And again, it's not necessarily the player, it's just a result. I think you could lump Darius, Bilal, and Justin Jones.
Yeah, into that. 100%. Like, 100%. The entire defensive line. And that's where you got the comeback player of the year, which was LJ Collier, because he got to play a whole ton this year. All right. That takes us to that. Coming up next on the Rise of Sierra podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's move on and talk about the playoffs. We've got four games this weekend to determine the final four. That's coming up next on the Rise of Sierra. We're back on the Rise of Sierra podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. We move to the playoff talk part of this, and we want to talk about our picks and maybe a handful of bets here and there. The weekend starts now. You know, I don't know what you said the FanDuel, but right now, three of the four games this weekend are the favorite. The favorite, or the home team especially, is favored by at least 6 points. We've got an 8.5 point spread in favor of the Chiefs in the first game on Saturday, 9.5 point favorites, the Lions, and 6 point favorites for the Eagles over the Rams. So I don't know if what you were looking at FanDuel is a little bit different. Before we get the most evenly matched game of the weekend, and that is the Baltimore Ravens and Buffalo Bills in Buffalo for the final game of the week in the late afternoon time slot. No Sunday night game. We're getting a late afternoon and a night game on Saturday, and it's a midday game essentially. Oh no, it's early afternoon and late afternoon Well, I guess technically the Ravens Bills game is a night game for most of the rest of the country. Like, so right. It fits at 4:30.
Yeah, and it's interesting how they did this because, you know, and again, they can't control who makes it, you know, as much as people want to say they've got, and they do have, I mean, they do have an agenda, don't get me wrong, but the parity of the NFL is what makes it, you know, so appealing and why it dominates every single ratings every single week, right? You know, if you look at TV ratings, if you're one of those guys,
the top 50 shows are all NFL games,
literally all of them. So it's like you can't, you know, you can say what you want about the NFL, the product, this, that, or the other. It's the most popular thing in America, so it doesn't matter. So that being said, to your point, these games are wild. That it's, and so the FanDuel has Kansas City, Houston, Kansas City by 8, or favored by 8.5. Has Washington, Detroit favored by 8.5. LA, Philly favored by 6.5. Before we get to, like you said, and we don't mean it in this direction, but like on paper, the competitive game, right? Baltimore 1.5-point road favorites, which is interesting in and of itself, over Buffalo. So we kick off 2:30 Arizona time on Saturday with the defending looking to three-peat, which would be just an insane, insane accomplishment. Jess and I have already explained to you guys that's what we're rooting for. Sorry, not sorry. We enjoy watching history. It's cool, man. Like to say you were able to witness the first three-peat, you know, modern three-peat in the NFL is just such a cool thing to be able to say, right?
Yes. Yes.
And so that's what we're hoping for with the Cardinals out. But 8.5, man.
Houston's going to be overmatched. They've been good recently. I will give them that.
So that was going to be my question. Is there a way, or is it just, I don't want to say a foregone conclusion, but like it feels like it would take a Herculean effort from the Texans defense to overcome what has been an incredibly hot and getting healthy at the right
time. DJ Humphrey's coming back. Isaiah Pacheco's right. Like the Chiefs are healthy this week. And the last part of the season, you saw that offense heating up. You know, getting Hollywood. And like Hollywood and Hopkins, that was supposed to be the Cardinals, wasn't it? It was supposed to be the Cardinals. They got Hollywood and Hopkins and Xavier Worthy. That's absurd. That's absurd. Yeah, I when I wrote my underdogs column for Sportsbook Wire, normally I do three picks, and I looked at that one first, and I'm like, oh no, and like I think the Chiefs. I think this is going to be the least competitive game of the weekend, and I think the Texans, who have been playing better. Let's not forget that the Chiefs defense has been fantastic. I think this is not going to be terribly, terribly competitive. That said, and I think I've even got the under on this. I think it'll be 27-13.
Yeah, I think this is one where, you know, 41.5 is an interesting number, but I'm going to go that it covers, you know, and 27-19 was what, 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago.
Yeah.
I'm going to go that it's right around there. I'm going to go 27-13. So just over.
Okay. Let me see. And I was looking at some passing props, and I was like, C.J. Stroud over. I'm like, what about the C.J. Stroud interception? Oh, they're expecting him to get picked off. -175 for over half an interception. So, yeah, that's not worth doing. That's not worth doing at all. And I will say that I think props are a lot harder in the playoffs because there's a little less trendiness to it. I do like Isaiah Pacheco over the 41.5 rushing yards and then give him plus 110 at 50+, but not higher than that.
So the first thing I'm going for, because it's an insane thing, Travis Kelce over 53.5 receiving yards and ladder that up to 70. And if I misread this, I apologize, but I think I read it's 7 games in a row of 70 yards or more receiving in the playoffs. So, you know, why not just hammer that one more time? So if you take the ladder up to 70 plus, it's plus 220. If you just take the 53.5, it's minus 113. So I'm double checking my information right now. Just in case. I don't want to give bad info, you know. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Sorry, I lied. 11, 12, 13 games in a row in the playoffs over 70 yards.
Oh my gosh.
So Travis Kelce, 70 plus yards is where I would go. Now don't get crazy, because look, okay, 93 in the Super Bowl last year, 116 against Baltimore, but 75-71. In the first two rounds. So again, this is their first game. I would caution that. I would caution going much over 70, but because again, Justin, I don't think this is going to be highly competitive. But I think we get that 70.
The Washington-Detroit game is a 9.5-point spread on BetMGM. I've got chalk in this one in terms of the win, but I think it's going to be a competitive game. I think that's where they're at. But Washington's defense has been sneaky good, and they have allowed 20 or fewer points in 4 of the last 6 games. And yes, those... we're against Tennessee, New Orleans, Dallas, and then Tampa Bay, okay? But they've won 6 games in a row. They have scored 30 or more in half of those games. And Detroit's defense, outside of Minnesota's disaster and against the Chicago Bears, who are terrible, they gave up 34 to the 49ers. They gave up 48 to the Bills. They gave up 31 to the Packers. That defense is not doing great. Now, they did fantastically in Minnesota, but that was a disaster. And so I expect this game to be a touchdown. I'm not saying it's going to be the Washington's going to win. I just think it'll be a one score game, and I think it will be. And I also think it's not gonna reach that 55.5. I don't think at all. I think it'll be probably a 27-23 or 27-20 type game.
Yeah, this is a tough one, man. I mean, I'm not sure where I fall on this game overall this season. You know, but you look at it, when you look at like opponents, right? You see that Detroit's just been so consistently good outside of that Tampa Bay game that was early in the season, right? And so it's hard to look at the Commanders and buy them competing or winning this game,
right? Like I'm not gonna be crazy to say they're gonna beat the Lions. I just think it'll be a touchdown instead of two touchdowns.
Yeah, so that's kind of where I'm at too. So I'm going to go with I'm going to go that this is one of those where the Lions win, and I'm going to go 55 and a half is so much, dude. I'm going to go let's go 28 to 20. So they get you on the hook.
yeah, that would work. That would work. I don't love any of the props in this game.
Recording in progress.
But let me see. Give me. Okay. This is the one I like. This is the one prop I like. Zach Ertz anytime touchdown at plus 300.
Yeah, Ertz has been on fire for them, right?
And he's such a security blanket for, because you know, he's not dynamic now. He's just reliable. And yeah, and he's been good this year. Like, he's not been like, wow, he wasn't Trey McBride, but he's been making plays. He's been making plays. Yeah. Any props that you like in that game?
The one thing I'm looking at that's tough, I'm gonna take Eckler over his receiving yards again.
Ooh.
But they're not. Oh, there they are. Why is it? Holy cow! They changed their layout. You're killing me, FanDuel. So I would take him. His receiving yards are at 23 and a half. I would take. I mean, it's close enough. I know we usually say this the opposite way, but I would take him 25 plus, laddered up to 40. I like that one. And then the other one I like. I'd love the Ertz prop, by the way. Ertz anytime touchdown is plus 270, so a little better on your end. They're really juicing Deami Brown, right? Like, that's kind of crazy to see him. But the one I'm looking at, Cliff, the way they do things, John Bates plus 1500 anytime touchdown. They almost got him in last game, remember?
Yeah.
And so I'm, you know, again, don't go crazy. Don't be like, hey, I'm going to put $100 on this.
sprinkle a few dollars on there.
But yeah, put a 10 spot on it, win $150 and have enough to bet whatever you want to bet on Friday or on Sunday.
Yeah. And which takes us to Rams Eagles, where Eagles are at home favored by 6. Here's the thing. I'm not confident enough to say the Rams are going to win, but I believe that they're going to make this game really, really tough. And I know, especially, they played each other, and the Eagles just absolutely ran all. It was the Saquon game was so good, but this Rams defense has been fantastic. They have 4 out of their last 5 games held teams under 10 points. And they find their offense started clicking last week. And while Philly's defense is number 1 in the league in yards and number 2 in scoring, and they've held opponents to under 20 points in 6 of their last 7 games, I just feel this is going to be a hard game to watch. I think it is going to be a slugfest, and I don't think it's going to be very, like, I'm expecting a close game. I'm thinking 20-16 is what this game's going to be.
One of the things about this game that's really interesting to me is that, you know, you've had a Rams offense that's really found its footing and a Eagles offense that looks out of sorts a lot. That being said, 44 and a half feels heavy on this game. And so I'm going to go by the hook again. I'm going to take the Rams to cover, but I'm going to take the Eagles to win 24-20. Here's the big one for me. I think that Dallas Goedert has a decent game for the Eagles, and we see him over that 39.5, I think is what he's at, 37.5 at minus 114. That's the one thing I like in this one. The other one go ahead.
I was going to say, I like DeMarcus Robinson anytime touchdown at plus 500 for this game, where it's likely enough and valuable enough. Like, you could go with Puk at plus 155, Kyren Williams at minus 115. That's just whatever. But Robinson's, his name seems to come up, and so plus 500 for that. Like, you could go Jahan Dotson at plus 750. I don't know if you can keep cashing that though, if over the last 2 weeks.
Right, exactly.
And then we go to the final game of the weekend, which is the premier game, which is Ravens Bills. The Ravens are technically 1 point one point favorites on the road. This game between Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson, the Bills have not lost at home this season. That is the only reason why I'm giving them the edge. I think the Bills are the one underdog that wins the game outright this weekend. And so, but when it comes to the seeding, the home, it's chalk this week for me. The home team wins all those games. And 51.5, I don't know. Like, that's the thing. Is it going to be high scoring or is it going to be low scoring? 27-24 Bills win, and you stay on the under with the hook because it's 51.5 for BetMGM.
And isn't it wild to think that this team, or this game in general, is like just such an odd game in the sense of they've got these two matched up. It's the primetime game. I mean, 4:30. And the Ravens, maybe, I don't know. Why are the Ravens favored? I know it's basically negligible, right? Like, it's basically a pick 'em at this point, but why are the Ravens favored in this? Did it make sense to you?
It didn't. Like, this is a Bills team that's been better all year, hasn't lost at home. Yeah, it doesn't make sense to me. Maybe it's just like, I didn't check the lines earlier in the week, so I don't know if the odds shifted at all. But maybe it's because that Baltimore defense seems to have come around, because they were so bad earlier in the season. They've held opponents under 20 points or 17 and fewer in five straight games. And so, but yeah, but Buffalo's a different beast. Yeah. They lost to New England. You cross out that game. But they've got 30-plus points in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 of their last 10 games. And that's just looking at the last 10. I didn't even go back farther on their schedule. Let's see if it goes further. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 of 12. Well, 10 of the last 12 games are 30 or more.
What's wild to me about this game more than anything is that you've got two teams that are, excellent at everything, right? They're good all across the board. That's why for me in this game, more than anything, the thing that I like is I like that you have these two, and this is, I truly don't know what BetMGM does for stuff like this, but under game specials in FanDuel, they have two things that I like. The first one is each team to score one touchdown and one field goal in each half. So it doesn't have to be just one, but one or more. And then the second one, and that's plus 1,100. The second one, I love this. It's my long shot of the week. I'm gonna sprinkle on it. Another, $10 sprinkle. This is each team to score one rushing touchdown and one passing touchdown in each half. So, you know, that goes to the question, and I know that there might be some weather and whatnot, but that goes to your question is like, is this game close or, you know, high scoring or low scoring? How does it play out? I think this is going to be a really competitive, high scoring, fun, energetic game. I'm going to take a shot on both of those this week. Kind of see what happens with it and go from there. But that's how I'm looking at this. I like this matchup. I think, you know, there's a reason it got this spot, right?
Yes. Like, yes, 100%.
It's the best game of the weekend. It's going to be fun to watch. It's going to be fun to see how it plays out. And if either of these guys, whoever wins, can slow down Patrick Mahomes, right? And we'll see if Mahomes is even there, which you and I both think he will based on our earlier picks. But, like, you know, that's such an important game. It's such a fun game. I'm really excited for it. It's going to be a fun weekend, man.
Yeah, it's. I can't wait. This is going to be a fun weekend. It's a bummer because as Cardinal fans, we don't get to enjoy anything other than just for the love of the game. For the love of the game, and maybe if you want to hate, the Rams because they're in the division, but these are some nice matchups. So
yeah. And I didn't pick the last game because I truly have no idea. Like I'm leaning Ravens right now, but it's Thursday night, and I really haven't decided who I like in this one yet, or what the advantage is going to be, and I'm still trying to figure out why the Ravens are favored on the road. Like that's so fishy to me. Like it's
weird.
Stuff like that always gets me as somebody that unfortunately does gamble. Like that's the type of like paranoid stuff that you end up start looking at of like, ooh, what do they know? Like, what are they trying to set up? Like why would they do this type stuff? And that's where I'm at in this one.
All right. With that, we will wrap up this edition of the Rise of Sea Red podcast. Best our Cardinals talk on the web. Seth and I will be back next week to talk about more Cardinals offseason. And of course, we're going to talk NFL playoffs. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. Thanks for listening. As always, we'll be back again soon.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up, Sea Red.